This is KUAF, a listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas, and this is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, September 23rd, 2021. I'm Kyle Kellums. Today, the boom in outdoor recreation businesses and a new program at the University of Arkansas designed to foster local entrepreneurship from mountain biking to fishing. That's all in about 4 minutes on today's show. And Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis will tell us in our second half hour that cooler temperatures are coinciding with outdoor music almost everywhere. The numbers of active cases and people hospitalized because of COVID-19 in Arkansas are falling. The Arkansas Department of Health reports 511 fewer active cases and 26 fewer people in the hospital today because of the virus. That same report counts 1,463 new cases and 29 newly reported deaths. There have been more than 7,500 fatal cases of COVID-19 in Arkansas. According to the Arkansas Tourism Ticker, managed by Talk Business and Politics and sponsored by the Arkansas Hospitality Association, Arkansas's 2% tourism tax between January and June was up by 60% compared to the same period last year. When the pandemic began, state tourism tax revenue fell almost 23%, the lowest level since 2014. Combined hospitality tax collections in 17 cities totaled about $27 million, which is up almost 30% compared to last year. The University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences is receiving an additional $4.7 million in federal grant money to continue efforts to improve rural health care. The money will help fund training and retention of primary care physicians. The latest grant from the Health Resources and Services Administration follows more than $7 million in grants in the last 2 years for similar programs. The project is designed to recruit and retain medical students from rural and underserved areas of Arkansas in hopes they return to practice in those areas. Four of the top five schools in Arkansas in the latest U.S. News and World Report rankings are in Northwest Arkansas. Haas Hall Academy in Fayetteville is in the top spot, followed by Haas Hall Academy Bentonville. Bentonville High School is ranked fourth, Rogers New Technology School fifth. And inside that U.S. News and World Report top 10 are Fayetteville High School East, Arkansas Arts Academy in Rogers, and Bentonville West. And the Northwest Arkansas Naturals are a game away from claiming the AA Central Championship. Last night, the Nats defeated Wichita 5-1 at Arvest Ballpark to take a 2-0 lead in the best-of-five series, Game 3 scheduled for tomorrow night in Wichita. This is Ozarks at Large. Americans spend a bunch on outdoor recreation. The United States Bureau of Economic Analysis places annual spending at almost $460 billion. Arkansas and Northwest Arkansas collect plenty of that spending. This region has long attracted hunting and fishing, and the nearly weekly addition of mountain biking trails is only increasing that outdoor spending. A new program at the University of Arkansas will support entrepreneurs passionate about the outdoors. The program will include a 15-credit-hour certificate opportunity, a Master of Science in Product Innovation arm, and support through the Greenhouse Business Incubator in Bentonville. We asked Sarah Goforth, the Executive Director of the Office of Entrepreneurship and Innovation at the University of Arkansas, and John Johnson, Professor in the Walton College of Business at the U of A, about the program. Sarah Goforth says it's really rooted in a simple idea.
One way to develop programs is around what are entrepreneurs passionate about? In our case, what are students passionate about? What do they get excited about? What's the best playground for them to explore what it is to be a founder, to develop a new product, a new service? And there's really no better opportunity than this space here. We are the supply chain capital of the world, the retail capital of the world, the mountain biking capital of the world. And so why wouldn't we create a program like this? And so, you know, Brendan was like a gift falling in our lap, helping us connect the dots between what we were talking about and what our funders were interested in supporting.
All right. So yes, we do have this convergence of supply chain and retail and mountain biking, but it's got to be more than just having a convergence. I mean, you've got to think it through. What does work to create a program like this?
It's everything, I suppose. It is that convergence, I think, that's really important. One of the skill sets that we we pride ourselves on is sort of recognizing an opportunity when we see it. But opportunities almost never are delivered to you as a concrete plan, right? So you have to sort of understand what the different parts of the puzzle are, figure out what you or we as the university bring to the table, and then figure out how it all fits together. I think that one of the really nice things about this particular opportunity, and Sarah mentioned it when she suggested students and their passions, is what's happening in Northwest Arkansas in general around trails and art and culinary and music and all the other things is a perfect fit for what a university should want to attract the students that that we would love to come to the university and graduate from here.
Yeah, and I believe the best way for a student to learn things is by doing. And so any opportunity that I have to create a program that's experiential and hands-on and gets them in the muck of actually creating a business and also de-risks that for them is something that we should do, because that's what makes it real and tangible. And that's what allows them, you know, in their future careers, whatever they may be innovators. And so jumped on this opportunity for that reason.
So when you mentioned de-risk, I'm guessing that means you've learned more, you've been inside, and so that lessens the chances that you might make a mistake that could hurt an emerging business that you try to create.
Yes, that's exactly right. And one of the first things I tell students who come into my circle, however I meet them, is I ask them what they think the number one reason that startups fail is. And usually people will say, not enough money, or, you know, they didn't spend enough on marketing, or couldn't get the right team together. And all those are reasons that can really bring a startup down. But the number one reason they fail is that they built something nobody wants, that they invested their time, their money, their energy in this great idea they had without ever really engaging with the industry needs or the consumer needs if they have a direct-to-consumer kind of product or service. And so the design of a good incubator helps them test those hypotheses about what people want early and often, so that by the time they get to developing a product, developing a company, developing a service, they're confident that there's a market need for it, and that market need allows them to make more money than they spend. So they have a lower risk of failing. And that's a skill set, the ability to do that, to de-risk your idea for yourself. Gosh, I hear from students all the time that matters no matter what job they're in. Matters if you're a nurse in a hospital, matters if you're a corporate executive, matters if you're an entrepreneur.
I would add to that, and one of the things that Sarah's done such a great job and her team at OEI, or the Office of Entrepreneurship and Innovation, is more or less giving students permission to think about starting a business. So often it's such a daunting prospect, or people just don't know where to begin. And Sarah not only de-risks it, she demystifies it in ways that are just so terribly important. So another thing I tell students when we talk about entrepreneurship is there's no better time in life to start a business than when you're a freshly graduated student, because you know how to eat ramen noodles, and you know how to live on the cheap, and you know how to work obscene hours, and you're not addicted to cash, and you're not addicted to all of the things you get addicted to as a grown-up in society, mortgage payments and insurance and stuff like that. So it's not a mark against anyone who has just graduated from college to start a business that didn't succeed. It can be it's a good thing, right, that you took the risk. So it's the perfect time to try that.
Yeah, don't leave your idea on the napkin, is what I always say.
I know we've talked mostly about mountain biking when we're kind of as an adjacency to this, but outdoor can cover kayaks, walking sticks, hiking, backpacks, anything that would be used for outdoor recreation?
I hope we get a walking stick company. That would be awesome. Yes, this is a huge industry. So make no mistake, this is a $450 billion industry in the United States. That is over 2% of the economy of our country, and it is almost as large as the pharmaceutical industry. So the fact that we are not already in this space serving and growing entrepreneurs is, lack of foresight on our part. We should absolutely be there. It's worth it. About half of that space is actually boating and hunting. So you really, we are thinking about it very, very broadly. This region has particular assets in particular outdoor sectors, but our program will be open to the full spectrum of entrepreneurs and ideas.
We talk about the programs being bicycle forward, but not bicycle exclusive. The opportunities around mountain biking in the area are just unlimited. It's astounding what's happened in the area. So cycling has some natural advantages, but we really try not to restrict ourselves to thinking too narrowly about any particular outdoor activity.
Can it be democratic? I mean, you don't have to come in from a certain social class or a certain background to emerge as an entrepreneur?
I think it can be. And we happen to live in a community that really, really cares about this issue, both in the context of entrepreneurship and in the context of outdoor recreation. There's a lot of discussion nationwide about diversity, equity, and inclusion and access to services and education in this country. There's a lot of action here. And so one of the things that we believe and we are designing for with the incubator in particular is that the best way to engage underrepresented communities of people in the outdoors is to engage entrepreneurs who are part of those communities in the development of new products and services and ideas. The worst thing that we could do is say, well, we're going to design products for that group of people, that population of people that, you know, only 10% of them ever go hiking. That's not the way to do it. And so we're designing this with intentional goals and metrics around diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Sarah Goforth is the Executive Director of the Office of Entrepreneurship and Innovation at the University of Arkansas. John Johnson is a professor in the Walton College of Business at the U of A. They spoke with us earlier this month via Zoom.
Every afternoon, thousands of listeners tune to KUAF for the biggest stories, thoughtful commentaries, and insightful features found on All Things Considered. KUAF is only able to bring you All Things Considered because of your support. It will cost KUAF almost $60,000 to air All Things Considered this year. Give now and support the news you rely on every afternoon. Give at supportkuaf.com. And thanks.
Our on-air fundraiser at KUAF begins tomorrow morning at 6 during Morning Edition. Tomorrow afternoon from 3 to 5, the University of Arkansas Campus Bookstore will host a book signing with Casey Kaser, Assistant Professor of English and Director of the Medical Humanities Program at the University of Arkansas. Her new book, Marginalize, Southern Women Playwrights Confront Race, Region, and Gender, has just been awarded the Eudora Welty Prize. That honor is given annually to an outstanding work of literary scholarship on women's studies, Southern studies, or modern letters. Yesterday, we sent a Zoom invite to Casey to ask her a few questions about the book. She says the work is partly inspired by caveats women playwrights have included at the front of their scripts, like the one Marcia Norman placed in front of her 1983 play, Night Mother.
She says, under no circumstances should the set and its dressing make a judgment about the intelligence or taste of Jesse and Thelma. It should simply indicate that they are very specific, real people who happen to live in a particular part of the country. Heavy accents, which would further distance the audience from Jesse and Thelma, are also wrong. And hers is not the only one that is like that. And so I began to ask myself, what exactly are these Southern women playwrights responding to?
She says the playwrights she examines in the book are from a region that has deep historical challenges when it comes to equity, but a region that is also often misrepresented in art and literature.
So I began to think that these playwrights are very aware of their regional identity and the perception of the South as sort of an exceptional, maybe even backwards region in opposition to the nation as a whole. And I also thought that they were responding to the context in which they are working and the genre in which they are working, in which, you know, the ultimate success is having a play staged in the city perhaps most antithetical to the South, New York City. And also that they are probably very aware of their identities as female playwrights, as women of color, as queer lesbian playwrights. And those are factors that have often presented obstacles to their success in terms of commercial and critical success in the American theater.
Casey Kaser developed a framework to read the plays she scrutinized for her book, Placing, Displacing, and Replacing the South.
And these are the conscious strategies that I feel like they use to navigate some of these minefields. So in the plays that place the South, they use very recognizable Southern settings, recognizable Southern characters and tropes and themes. If anyone is familiar with Beth Henley's Crimes of the Heart, that is one of the examples that I use. And they actually often take very comic frames and satire these stereotyped representations as a way to overturn them.
She also explores the continuing inequity when it comes to production and publication of women playwrights and women playwrights of color and LGBTQ plus women playwrights compared to playwrights who happen to be white men.
Persistent inequities in American drama and theater that have persisted from, you know, the early 1900s to now. There still is a lot of problems with equity.
Casey Kaser's new book is Marginalized: Southern Women Playwrights Confront Race, Region, and Gender. The book has been honored with the Eudora Welty Prize. She'll sign copies tomorrow afternoon from 3 to 5 at the University of Arkansas Campus Bookstore.
KUAF is supported by Hendricks College in Conway. Founded in 1876, Hendricks is recognized by education author Lauren Pope as one of 40 colleges that changed lives, and is nationally recognized for academic excellence, engaged learning, innovation, and more among private liberal arts colleges. Hendricks.edu/connect for more information.
A detailed miniature salute to small independent businesses that once dotted American highways will be on exhibit at the Fort Smith Regional Art Museum beginning tomorrow. David Malcolm Rose, The Lost Highway, contains scale models of businesses that time and the interstate have now passed by. The artist says he wanted to create a portrait of the people who made their living by the side of the road and to tell the story of the end of an era. The exhibit will be at the Ram in 2 January. Admission there is free. This reminder, the Northwest Arkansas Hispanic Heritage Festival takes place on the Fayetteville Square Sunday, September 26th, which is this Sunday. Is this Sunday, September 26th already? It is. So that's this Sunday from 1 to 5. It's free. It's family-friendly. It offers a variety of educational and entertainment offerings. There will be arts. There will be crafts, children's area, dance contest, vendors, live entertainment. If you'd like more information, you can call Michelle. Area code is 870, then 318-5384, which means a week from Sunday, it's already October. It's crazy. Also, I want to tell you that Arkansas and Folk Traditional Arts, part of the University of Arkansas, will present Tim Erickson in concert October 9th, which, as we've just discovered, isn't that far away. This will take place at 6:30 that night at the Mount Sequoia Center in Fayetteville. Erickson presents Americana, Northern Roots, and, quote, strange and wonderful originals. For tickets or information, mountsequoia.org. Finally, speaking of October 9th, Trike Theater in Bentonville will host a professional development opportunity for educators designed to support the use of arts integration strategies in the classroom. Each event will present a specific focus topic with activities designed for either primary, upper, or general education. For information, triketheater.org.
Time now for today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. I'm Paul Gatling. Well, the day has finally come. Mark your calendars. The Arkansas Department of Transportation says the Bella Vista Bypass will open to traffic on October 1st and officially become a part of Interstate 49. Jeff De La Rosa reports for us that a ribbon-cutting celebration will take place at 10 a.m. on September 30th to mark the completion of the 18.9-mile project. The new I-49 segment consists of 6 projects totaling more than $220 million. And the first of that work began way back in February 2011. Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson and Missouri Governor Mike Parson will join state officials and legislators at the Arkansas-Missouri state line for that celebration. When it opens, the bypass around the western edge of Bella Vista will link 265 miles of interstate from Fort Smith to Kansas City. We've got that story up on our website now, and you can find that at nwabusinessjournal.com. When we come back, Roby Brock has an interview with Governor Hutchinson to discuss various topics, including the state's role in accepting Afghan refugees. That is after the break on today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by The Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. ArkansasStateChamber.com. Arkansas Blue Cross and Blue Shield. For more than 70 years, Arkansas Blue Cross and Blue Shield has used its knowledge and compassion to create healthcare solutions for individuals and businesses. ArkansasBlueCross.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. First Security, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
The White House announced recently plans to send Afghanistan refugees to the United States, with Arkansas set to receive nearly 100. Afghans are fleeing the country now, ruled again by the Taliban. In a recent interview with Roby Brock, Governor Hutchinson discussed where those refugees may be headed and what the state's role will be.
Well, the information that I have from the White House is that there's 98 refugee allocation to our state. That doesn't mean they come here immediately. It could be over a course of weeks, but that's the allocation that we've received. And of that, 49 would be in Northwest Arkansas and 49 assigned in Central Arkansas. There's really no specific role of the state, but the White House is the refugee coordinator there, has made an effort really to communicate, let us know what's going on. The relationship is from the federal government to the community, the refugee settlement organizations. For example, Canopy in Northwest Arkansas, and there will be, which is a church group that has really been licensed to handle refugee resettlement, and then a similar type organization or faith-based group in Central Arkansas. And so we don't know exactly when they'll arrive, but they went through the vetting process with me, and obviously we want anyone who comes here to be vetted to make sure that they have met the criteria as a Afghan refugee, served our state or country over the last 20 years, our military services there, that they have had their health screening done. And so that's the assurance that I have. And they went through that in great detail. But over the course of the next couple of weeks, I expect those Afghan refugees to start arriving.
The governor also answered a question about the possibility of a special legislative session later this year. State legislators are set to complete their regular session business when they come to the Capitol September 29th to finalize a new congressional district map. That's part of their duties for the once every 10 years census. Some lawmakers want to consider other measures, such as legislation similar to a Texas law that eliminates abortion and pushing back on a proposed federal rule to require vaccines in businesses with more than 100 employees. Here's the question from Roby Brock.
I know you respect the legislature and the separation of powers, but I kind of want to get your take as an attorney and as governor. Do you think they can take up these other issues in regular session? Because if the answer is no, they're going to come to you to put it on a special session call.
And the answer is no, I don't think they can bring anything but redistricting up in the extended regular session. Our Constitution provides for a limited session, and there's an exception that they can come back for redistricting purposes. So I think it's limited in the special session. Limited in the regular session that's extended. When you get to the special session that we may have for the primary purpose of adding additional income tax cuts, then if they have, I believe it's a two-thirds vote, a supermajority, they can add additional items to it. I think you have to take it on a case-by-case basis as to whether anything else should be added to that special session. There's always some cleanup items, but in most of those instances, it's preferable to wait until the regular session when it comes up again. But we'll see how that develops and what there's a consensus for as to what should be added. In terms of the Texas abortion case, that most likely is going to have to be, obviously, it's in the courts. I think everybody wants to wait and see what the final decision is there. We're well positioned in Arkansas with our own court challenge that's working its way up to the court. So I think the thing to do would be to wait until those court issues are resolved before we take additional action.
You said possible special session. Are you committed to having a special session on tax reform?
Well, I'm committed to tax reform, reducing the tax rate. And I think we're very close to it. I've always said that we need to reduce our individual income tax rate down, hopefully to 5% eventually, but I believe we can get there to 5.5% while I'm governor. And that's exciting to me. We've worked hard to build our economy. And so I ask my Department of Finance to come up with a 5.5 plan to reduce it 5.5%. I asked them to work with the General Assembly on this. We've incorporated ideas, and there's a consensus we can get there. Now, there's some that want to do more. We're working through whether we can actually reduce it further to 4.9, but that remains to be seen. And then we have to determine how we allocate those tax reductions among the different income groups, and that's something we're currently working on. I don't want to call the session until we have a consensus on it. We worked through all of this process. We haven't completed that yet. So they're going to have the redistricting regular session at the end of September, I believe. And then we'll probably be looking at October if we can build the consensus in terms of the special session for the tax reductions.
So you're saying that special session may not happen on the tail end of the regular session if that consensus is not there. Am I hearing you clearly on that?
That's correct. I'm not bound by any time frame. I want to make sure I'm clear on it, what we can do, and that we have some consensus before we bring everybody in.
And that was Governor Asa Hutchinson appearing on a recent episode of Talk Business and Politics with Roby Brock. Remember, you can watch that television program every Sunday morning at 10:30 on our content partners at KFSM 5 News. In other news this week, it's a busy week over at NWABusinessJournal.com. A new real estate report out on Tuesday says Walmart's new Bentonville headquarters is responsible for nearly two-thirds of the record value in commercial building permits issued in Benton and Washington counties in the year's first half. The Skyline report says the Walmart project accounted for about $435 million in commercial building permits. And Washington Regional has an eye on future growth. The Fayetteville Healthcare System paid more than $6.5 million for 15 acres west of its existing campus. President and CEO Larry Shackelford said the deal would allow Washington Regional to plan for the next 20 years of growth. For those stories and more, be sure and visit NWABusinessJournal.com, and you can follow our reporting each and every day. I'm Paul Gatling, and that's the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Until next time, thanks for listening.
This is Ozarks at Large. I am with Timothy Dennis inside the Furman Gardner Performance Suite, the Carver Center for Public Radio. We are more than 6 feet away. That's why we don't have to have masks on.
Exactly. Doesn't sitting in this room feel good?
It feels both familiar and unfamiliar at the same time.
I swear, one of these days, we're going to have performers back in this performance
studio. That is a promise from both of us.
Yes.
And we will. It's not going to be today, but
not
soon.
Tomorrow.
That's right.
We're working it out.
That's right.
Until then, though, there's a lot of live music happening that you can see throughout the listening area.
Very good.
This evening, the Walmart Museum is continuing their Live at the Five and Dime series.
But we're getting close to the end of this,
right? We are getting close to the end of this. Getting close to the end of outdoor music, because,
right.
I mean, it's getting cooler, which I love. You do not. That's okay.
Hold on. You make it sound like I don't like cool weather. I do. I just get very nostalgic for the end of summer. Summer is my favorite time of year.
Fair enough. That aside,
yes.
Live at the Five and Dime this evening is going to have the Handshake Saints. They are a rock and roll band that has a blend of R&B, alternative, roots rock, and soul music.
I think I'm very interested in this.
You won't take time to cry. Blurring lines in your mind.
just wanna be free.
That being Alive at the Five and Dime event, it starts at 5 o'clock this evening. It's outside of the Walmart Museum on the Bentonville Square.
And it's free.
Exactly. Music happening in Bentonville tonight up at Crystal Bridges is the next concert in the Van Cliburn series.
Right.
They are featuring Elio Villafranca, acclaimed pianist.
Right.
That is at 7 p.m. That is at Crystal Bridges in Bentonville. Also happening this evening down in Fayetteville, Kingfish is going to have the Ashton Barbary Band on stage. That show gets underway at 8 o'clock this evening. Again, that's at Kingfish in Fayetteville. Moving on to tomorrow night, George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville for their happy hour show is going to have the Bel Airs on stage.
Ah, the Bel Airs.
That makes you nostalgic.
It also makes me feel a little bit old, but yes, that does make me nostalgic. They've been playing George's for decades.
Tickets for that happy hour show are $8. That gets underway at 6 o'clock tomorrow evening at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville. On the east side of Fayetteville, Jamie Wayne Garrett is going to be on stage at Mojo's East.
I have been to Mojo's East,
yeah,
and it's the patio's great. I thumbs up.
All right.
On Sunday, I pray, oh Lord, would you forgive me?
That show gets underway at 7 o'clock tomorrow evening. Again, that's at Mojo's East at Mission and Crossover in Fayetteville. Another guy who should make you nostalgic is performing at the Momentary Friday evening, RJ Michaud.
Oh. I like RJ.
I do too. It's been a while since he's been in the area, but he is one of the best harmonica players I've ever heard.
Yeah, and he's just a splendid fellow too.
Exactly. One of the nicest guys. He is joined in that set with the Sloyter, S-L-U-Y-T-E-R. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. That is one of the On the Green concerts at the Momentary, so it's free, and it gets underway at 7:30. Again, that's tomorrow night at the Momentary in Bentonville.
I love this. The first few days of fall, and you are bringing us a serious outdoor slate.
Well, there's another outdoor show coming up next. Members Only is going to be at the Butterfield Stage in downtown Rogers.
They, too, are getting close to the end of their season.
And they are also a nostalgic band.
And it's also free.
Yes. Gets underway at 8 o'clock. Again, that's at the Butterfield Stage in downtown Rogers Friday evening. Over in Siloam Springs Friday evening, Route 358 is going to be on stage at Creekside Tap Room.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
There's a mania that I can't handle anymore. I'm too tired to pick you up when you're down. Not sure what I'm really hanging on to. It's time I do what's best for me and leave this town.
That show gets underway at 7 o'clock Friday night. Again, that's at Creekside Tap Room in Siloam Springs.
And by the way, ask to see the medal for the songwriting contest from Winfield.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a high honor.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Moving over to the east. The Gravel Bar in Eureka Springs this weekend, they're doing something interesting. They're having a lot of music Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. They're starting at 11 a.m. Friday, and they're going to have on stage Sophia and Bear, Patty Steele, and Shiloh Molina and the Honky Tonk Flame.
At 11 a.m. Friday?
Yeah, it starts at 11 a.m., then the music continues at 3 p.m. and 7 p.m.
Is Friday some holiday I don't know about?
I don't know.
I mean, more power to you.
Yeah. And that's just Friday. They have music Saturday and Sunday as well,
okay,
in a similar fashion. We'll talk about that in a minute.
All right.
Again, music starts at 11 a.m., goes until late Friday evening at the Gravel Bar in Eureka Springs. Okay, jumping over to Saturday. Butterfield Stage in Rogers is going to have the Nace Brothers on stage.
I woke up this morning from across the track.
That show is free, being at Butterfield Stage. Gets underway at 8 o'clock Saturday evening in Rogers. Fred's Hickory Inn in Bentonville Saturday evening is going to have Candy Lee on stage.
On the night that you nearly split me in two, it was the hardest thing I ever did do. But the pain that I felt brought me closer to you, and I'd do it all again if I had to. 'Cause you are the most precious thing.
That show gets underway at 7 o'clock Saturday evening. Again, that's Fred's Hickory Inn in Bentonville. Again, at the Gravel Bar, Saturday afternoon and evening, they're featuring Statehouse Electric, Alyssa Galvan, and Buddy Shootin' the Motivators.
Cruising down Beale Street like you was in a limousine. You got WDI on the radio and you're feeling like the king. You're gonna
We just got great music all over the place this weekend.
Again, that's starting at 11 a.m., continuing at 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. at the Gravel Bar in Eureka Springs Saturday. Okay, one more show Saturday evening. The Reed Southall Band will be on stage at the Majestic in Fort Smith.
Why do I write songs? Why can't my heart shut its mouth? Why can't I move on and give a fair chance to someone new? Why can't I fall out in love you?
Tickets for that are $20 advance. They go up to $25 on Saturday. That gets underway at 7 o'clock Saturday evening at the Majestic in Fort Smith. Okay, Sunday, Garrison Commons in Fort Smith is going to have Anita Smith on stage. Gospel singer. It's part of the continuing partnership between Music Moves and Crystal Bridges and their mobile art lab.
Cool.
Anita, she's a celebrated recording artist and songwriter, and supposedly her gospel and soul music will soothe your soul. That show gets underway at 5 o'clock at Garrison Commons in Fort Smith Sunday evening. Okay, then the Gravel Bar's lineup for Sunday, beginning at noon and going past 8 o'clock, includes Benjamin Stanley Owens, the Lead Pipe Conservatory Band, and Me and Him, which is Opal Agafia and Michael Scambry.
Mm-hmm. It's basically a music festival at the Gravel Bar this weekend.
And then moving ahead to Tuesday, Melody Pond is going to be on stage at Creekside Tap Room in Siloam Springs. Great local folk duo. That set gets underway at 5:30 Tuesday evening. Again, that's at Creekside Tap Room in Siloam. And that'll do us until next Thursday almost.
Timothy Dennis keeps us up to date on live music. Thank you, Timothy.
Thank you, Kyle.
Dr. Indira Govender thought it would be her dream job.
How much more amazing could you be to be called Doctors Without Borders?
But once she got inside,
we were just like the black faces at the front of the shop, but we were not actually the owners of the shop.
A racial reckoning at Doctors Without Borders on the next Reveal.
Reveal, Sunday afternoon at 2 on KUAF and streaming on the KUAF app. The Arkansas volleyball team now 10-2 overall and 1-0 in the SEC after last night's win over LSU in Barnhill Arena. Next up, weekend matches against Tennessee in Knoxville. The University of Arkansas Fort Smith volleyball team will be home for two matches this weekend, hosting Dallas Baptist tomorrow night and Texas Women's University Saturday afternoon. The Lions are 5-5 heading into the weekend. The John Brown University volleyball squad, now 9-9, they're on the road this weekend for Friday night and Saturday afternoon matches. The JBU women's soccer team, by the way, defeated number 12 Columbia College 2-0 last night in Missouri. JBU will host Central Christian Tuesday evening. JBU 5-1 so far this year. Meanwhile, the JBU men dropped their match at Columbia College last night. They will also host Central Christian Tuesday night in Siloam Springs. And the Arkansas Razorback soccer team, ranked 16th in the country, is at Texas A&M tonight. Arkansas has a three-game winning streak against the Aggies. Tonight's game seen live on the SEC Network.
The Hillberry Harvest Moon Music and Camping Festival is October 7th through the 10th at The Farm in Eureka Springs, and KUAF is giving you the chance to win tickets. Hillberry welcomes Railroad Earth, Leftover Salmon, Rumkey Mountain Boys, and more. Registration and additional information available at KUAF.com.
Tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, Designing Women, back on stage, complete with the attitude, the humor, and the monologues fans of the long-running TV show loved.
That I will not divulge the content of, but it will be reminiscent of something that the old audiences once adored, yes, and probably have watched incessantly on YouTube, where I get torn a new one, so to speak.
Sugarbaker and Associates are back nearly 25 years later with a brand new script for Theater Squared. A conversation with members of the cast on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 on KUAF and streaming at KUAF.com and on the KUAF app.
Words can bite. Like mosquitoes. Secretly.
This is Leah Uribe, Associate Professor at the University of Arkansas Music Department, expanding our musical boundaries with Sound Perimeter. We opened Sound Perimeter today with Kemia Ensemble performing Bite, a piece by American composer born in 1982, Philip Senk. Senk says about bite, quote, "Words can bite. Most of us have experienced being told something or receiving unsolicited advice that comes across as insulting. Bite explores the nuances of simple words and phrases that can get under your skin, like a pesky mosquito surreptitiously landing on your arm to feet. You don't notice them at first until after the itchy welt forms and you become aware of their presence in the environment." End quote.
Now, these words come in many different forms. Like casual comments, questions, backhanded compliments, and unsolicited advice. In the next few minutes, we are going to examine several of these microaggressions, starting with the common example, "Where are you from?" Here. "Are you from?" The United States. No! Where are you really from? It is undeniable that the addition of the word "really," "where are you really from," completely changes the context of the question to mean, "You do not
is a mixed chamber group dedicated to promoting contemporary classical music. Kemia Ensemble is comprised of soprano, violin, cello, flute, clarinet, piano, and two percussions. Its eight musicians are based in seven states across the United States and hold positions at academic institutions in Texas, Tennessee, Iowa, Missouri, North Carolina, Utah, and Arkansas. Kemia's violinist, Dr. Ergin Kang, is our own professor of violin at the University of Arkansas Music Department. Kemia will be presenting Intersections, a concert featuring brand new commissions and premieres of works by Nicholas Lil Benavides, David Biedenbender, and Nina Shaker this coming Monday, September 27 at 7:30 p.m. at the Faulkner Performing Arts Center, University of Arkansas. Check out our program notes for details. Tin Hat is an acoustic chamber music group based in San Francisco, California. Their music combines many genres, including jazz, southern blues, bluegrass, avant-garde, and much more. I discovered Tin Hat recently through their song The Secret Fluid of Dusk, and was taken aback by the evocative nature of the melodic lines. Let us listen to part of this composition written by founder member Mark Orton, who is also featuring the guitar, along with Carla Kjellstedt violin, Ben Goldberg clarinet, and Rob Reich piano. That was San Francisco-based band Tin Hat performing the end of The Secret Fluid of Dusk, recorded a few years ago at the Fried and Salvage Coffee House in Berkeley, California. Until October 15, we will continue celebrating Hispanic Heritage Month in the United States, a month to celebrate the histories, cultures, and contributions of American citizens whose ancestors came from Spain, Mexico, the Caribbean, and Central and South America, and all Latin American people and traditions. We join this celebration by closing Sound Perimeter today with an excerpt from Tango Trio, a piece written by composer, collaborator, and friend from Uruguay and based in Seattle, Miguel del Águila. This piece is performed today by the Transatlantic Ensemble. Enjoy this piece that evokes Argentine, Uruguayan, tango, milonga, and candombe idioms. This is Leah Uribe, Associate Professor at the University of Arkansas Music Department, expanding our musical boundaries with Sound Perimeter.
On-air fall fundraiser for KUAF begins not that far away, tomorrow morning at 6 during Morning Edition on KUAF. And a reminder that during this year's fall on-air fundraiser, we're not offering coffee mugs, CDs, or T-shirts as thank you gifts for your support. Instead, this fall, we're partnering with Penguin Ed's Barbecue to provide meals to ICU and emergency room workers in hospitals across our listening area. Every afternoon of our fundraiser, beginning tomorrow afternoon from 3 until 7, and then all day during our on-air fundraiser Saturday, we're asking you to support the public radio program you rely on every day. And when we receive 30 gifts of $30 or more, we'll be able to provide an area hospital with a Penguin Ed's gift card that will feed 50 nurses, doctors, administrators, janitorial staff, and more. The on-air portion of our fundraiser does begin tomorrow morning at 6, then will end Thursday, September 30th, as we close out the month. We are going to take a break on Sunday the 26th. No on-air fundraising on Sunday. We hope to provide an opportunity for listeners to support all the news, music, entertainment, connection, and more that they get from KUAF, and also to support the hardworking individuals who have been on the front line of the pandemic for more than a year and a half. And remember, you can support KUAF at any time, safely and securely, by going to supportkuaf.com. And thank you.
The Center for Arkansas Farms and Food offers educational classes and apprenticeships for small specialty crop farming. CAFF is training the next generation of Arkansas farmers to provide locally grown food. CAFF is part of the University of Arkansas System Division of Agriculture. Application deadline is October 1st. UAFarmSchool.org for more information.
Before we go, let's fulfill a promise from earlier this week. A bit more from our conversation with the authors of The Silken Thread, Five Insects and Their Impacts on Human History that we couldn't fit into Tuesday's show. I asked them about a tidbit they found and included the book that involves Sir Isaac Newton and toads.
And that one I found, Ray. Usually most of the obscure ones you found, but that one I found. And like many of these things, you think, oh, okay, this is just so. And so then looking for other references to back it up and finding a publication that talked about the sale of the document in which Newton had written that. And so an actual sale and money changed hands and so forth. But yeah, that one was a head scratcher. And I think I had Ray thinking that maybe I had too much hooch or something. There's something making to come up with that. How could you make, you can't make up something that bizarre. And this is Newton. You know, when I went to London, I only looked for two graves. One was Darwin and one was Newton. This is somebody pretty important in my book, and then to be writing that. So that's why we say in the, I think it's the end note, thank goodness he didn't write Principia Biologia, that he stuck with mathematics and physics instead of biology.
For our listeners, the context of Sir Isaac Newton and I mean.
Yeah, so, well, go ahead, Rob. Sorry.
No, that's all right. You have it.
I was just going to say that. He came up with a solution to the plague that was apparently better than the other solutions of the time, he wrote. And that was to take a toad and hang it upside down from a chimney for, I think, 3 days or something, and use the vomit from that toad as a lozenge to hold over the wounds, presumably buboes, and that would solve it. So toad vomit as a cure for plague.
That's Ray Fisher, and before him, Robert Wiedemann, entomologist with the University of Arkansas and authors of the new book, The Silken Thread, Five Insects and Their Impacts on Human History. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Batavia. We are a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Timothy Dennis produced today's show. Contributors included Leah Uribe. Oh, by the way, Timothy also produced today's Sound Perimeter. Today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report with Paul Gatling was produced by Stephanie Brock. It's part of our continuing relationship with Talk Business and Politics. You can learn more at talkbusiness.net. Thank you so much for being with us. Please take care of yourself. We are back with you tomorrow at noon and 7 and streaming at KUAF.com from the Carver Center for Public Radio. I'm Kyle Kellums.